BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. Ladies and gentlemen, COVID is taking its toll on this nation. But it's not only COVID itself, it's our response as a nation to COVID. There's not only the shot mandate issues that are going on, of course, and we've discussed those and likely we'll be bringing those up today, but also the COVID protocols that are taking place in so many hospitals across this nation. While this is certainly not true of all healthcare professionals, there are issues occurring across this nation in which whistleblowers are sounding the alarm. And by whistleblowers, I'm referring to doctors, nurses, attorneys, patient advocates, and even journalists that have exposed matters of egregious hospital abuses, neglect of patients, and denial of basic medicines to COVID patients. Well, addressing the issue today, we welcome Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet, President and CEO of Truth for Health Foundation. It is a nonprofit public charity. Since February of 2020, she's been part of the team of frontline physicians treating COVID early at home. With Dr. Peter McCullough, she's co-author and editor of The Guide to COVID Early Treatment, Options to Stay Out of Hospital and Save Your Life. Dr. Vliet is a 2014 Ellis Island Medal of Honor recipient for her national and international educational efforts in health, wellness, and endocrine aging in men and women. She's a past director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, received her MD degree, an internship in internal medicine at Eastern Virginia Medical School, and completed special training at Johns Hopkins. Speaking with us today as an independent physician, not as a spokesperson for any healthcare system or pharmaceutical company or insurance plan or political party, she is a patient advocate. Dr. Vliet, nice to catch back up with you and have you back with us here on Crosstalk.
It's a privilege to be back with you, Jim, and I so appreciate all the work you're doing to educate the public about the egregious response to COVID that has cost so many lives needlessly, when early treatment is available and effective medicines are available in the hospital that are being denied.
And let's delve into these issues. Just a week ago, Dr. Vliet, you led a press conference along with some very other notables on the theme Stop the Shot, caught on tape, and really showed patient abuses going on in hospitals, tape recordings of hospital executives about these abuses. And I'd like you to bring to light for our listeners, many not aware of this press conference that was held, what was revealed in this particular press conference?
Well, we actually had an attorney who was a power of attorney for her father-in-law at Mayo Clinic Scottsdale, admitted with COVID, and essentially was a medical prisoner without access to his family, his power of attorney, his legal representatives, and she was escorted off of the Mayo campus under color of law with law enforcement forcing her to leave. She was also the power of attorney for her mother-in-law at Banner Health System in Phoenix, and she was handcuffed by law enforcement and taken off of the Banner campus as an attorney and the power of attorney, healthcare agent for her mother-in-law, legally entitled to be there to advocate for her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law died because she was not able to get treatment. And Allie Schultz was successful, finally, in getting her father-in-law released from the medical prison Mayo had become and was able to save his life by getting him out of the hospital and home, where he got effective treatment that had been denied in the prestigious Mayo Clinic. So I want people to understand what I just said. This attorney, who had been with America's Frontline Doctors and was the point person on many lawsuits in 2020 that America's Frontline Doctors were doing over the issue of denial of medical care for COVID, so she's very knowledgeable about what was going on, and she said she had to get her father-in-law out of the hospital to save his life. So people that have in the past been able to count on doctors and hospitals to do the right thing when we entrust our lives to them are now finding that the hospitals are keeping their loved ones isolated, secluded for prolonged periods of time in violation of most state laws about seclusion of patients. They're in violation of the CDC guidelines for infectious quarantine or keeping them isolated because of an infection. They're keeping them prolonged for a long period of time. And Allie Schultz actually legally recorded in Arizona, which is a one-party consent state for audio recording of phone conversations that someone is a party to. She legally recorded the hospital administrator at Banner talking about the fact that all the hospital administrators met together, executives, met together two or three times a week to plan the COVID care and said, you will not be allowed to visit your father-in-law as long as he's here, or your mother-in-law. So they were saying, you will not be allowed to visit, regardless of the laws regulating healthcare power of attorney access to a patient as an advocate. And they were planning the coordination to restrict fluids and other elements that were not part of the, quote, COVID protocol that the federal government implemented under the CARES Act in 2020.
Matter of fact, Doctor, in an article you wrote, you talked about age-based rationing happening every day in COVID units of hospitals across this nation. What do you mean by age-based rationing?
Well, I wasn't saying in the editorial that age-based rationing is what they're doing today. What I was saying is that Ezekiel Emanuel wrote about the attenuation, which he meant rationing, of medical care after age 40, and the tail of the curve in his complete live system begins to fall off to minimal care at about age 50. And I was drawing the parallel between the Obamacare era advice that he gave President Obama on the healthcare law that we should ration or attenuate medical care for those over 50 because they've lived a complete life. And drawing the parallel, he is now in the shadow advising President Biden on the COVID policy, and the COVID policy is restricting effective treatment. It's restricting fluids, nutrition, antibiotics, corticosteroids, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. They're not giving adequate anticoagulation doses. They're not giving medicine to lower glucose if the person's glucose is rising. And they're only giving the patients remdesivir, which has about a 50% death rate, they knew from the Ebola trials. And remdesivir damages the kidneys. So once the kidneys are damaged after about 5 days on remdesivir, which the clinical trials showed in the Ebola trials in 2014, as well as in the COVID trials, one reason they stopped the trial early, people were having liver and kidney damage and dying of the drug. But that's the mandated drug that the hospitals are all using, and they're being paid an incentive by the federal government authorized by the CARES Act in March 2020 that established the treatments for COVID-19 and the coding system to financially incentivize the hospital to receive bonuses for using remdesivir and ventilators, for example, and they get another bonus when a patient dies with a COVID diagnosis in their hospital.
Okay, let's define it. What do you mean by bonus?
They get incentivized payments for all things COVID. You can call it a bonus, you can call it an incentive, you can call it a bounty. It's the same thing. It was authorized in the CARES Act that established all of the treatment for COVID-19 and the COVID coding that the hospitals use when they put in a diagnosis code for what they did for a patient in the hospital, they get an extra incentive payment for vaccination, PCR testing, COVID diagnosis, admitting to hospital, remdesivir, ventilators, and then when they report a COVID death, they get another payment. That's what I mean. The public does not know that, in effect, and it's gotten more pronounced under the Biden administration, the public doesn't know that the hospitals are receiving payments from our government for all of these diagnoses of COVID and treatments that for COVID that don't work and that are causing more side effects, and their patients are being denied the effective treatments. The IMASK protocol, all the protocols developed by the Frontline Critical Care COVID Alliance in the spring of 2020, those protocols were developed by critical care doctors for critical care patients sick with COVID in the ICU. None of those drugs are getting to the patients now. They're only getting remdesivir and other. They're getting inadequate doses of anticoagulation. They're given preventive doses, not treatment doses.
Who is making these decisions? Is this individual doctors? Is this hospital administrators? Does it go higher than that?
Well, the protocols coming down from the federal government is what I was just saying, that the federal government set what would be done, and the hospital administrators are dictating to the doctors what the doctors can and cannot do, because the hospitals are being paid to follow the protocol. So the doctors who do care, and there's some that I have personally witnessed and heard doctors being very cruel and insensitive to patients in the ICU and to their family members, but the doctors who do care are threatened with being fired if they go against what the hospital administrators have told them to do. And hospital administrators, I'm using that term loosely for the administrator at that hospital and the executive, chief medical officer, chief financial officer, the CEOs. The hospital executives, who are business people, are directing the doctors what they can and cannot do in that hospital. We have many whistleblowers of doctors and nurses who've come forward to us as the public charity, who have come forward to Attorney Tom Renz and his law group. Many of them are under federal whistleblower protection for bringing this information out to the light of day. Ralph Larego's firm in New York has whistleblowers that have brought data to them. Liberty Counsel attorneys have whistleblowers that have brought data to them. It's all over the country. It's happening.
We got to take a quick 60-second break here. Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valeed is with us today, president and CEO of Truth for Health Foundation. More information to come. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker and author with the Institute for Creation Research.
Dr. Morris, this might seem simple, but where did music come from?
Chris, music is an integral part of being in the image of God. The early chapters of Genesis reveal that just within a few generations of creation, men were constructing musical instruments, both wind instruments and string instruments. Soon we see that even this was perverted. Lamech, one of the patriarchs, even sang a song boasting of his adventures and murderous prowess. Musical instruments have been found from soon after the flood. Even Neanderthal fossils are found in conjunction with musical instruments. You see, Chris, the evidence that we find supports the biblical truth of creation. Even music started back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valete, our guest here today, president and CEO of Truth for Health Foundation. And friends, startling information here, a press conference just held last week on these very issues about the protocols. Dr. Valete, you were talking about one of the main protocols of hospitals is to place their patients on remdesivir, and very alarmed by this in light of the studies that are going on and the results that they knew in advance of remdesivir. Can a patient refuse remdesivir?
Well, they can, Jim, and quite frankly, remdesivir has such a high incidence of toxicity to the liver and kidney and high risk of death that it's actually potentially dangerous for people to be given that drug when they're already critically ill and there's inflammatory damage. This was shown in the Ebola trials in 2014, thereabouts, when Ebola was such a serious illness. And COVID-19 is not the same illness as Ebola. But the point is, the drug is the same. And when you have inflammatory damage in the body from the COVID illness, adding the drug toxicity that was already shown and that was they found it again in the 2020 clinical trial of remdesivir for COVID, which is one reason they terminated the trial early. People were dying from it, and people had kidney and liver damage during the clinical trial. And it seems to be that after about 5 days, the toxicity starts to skyrocket. Well, people can refuse it, but what we have found when we've actually gotten access to patients' medical records is that it will be documented in the patient record that the patient refused remdesivir, and they were given it anyway. And in our press conference, attorney Tom Renz pointed out that when a patient has refused a treatment and the hospital administration and medical team give it anyway, in most states, that's considered legally a battery, and therefore, it is similar to a woman who tells someone, "Don't touch me," and the man goes on to rape her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a criminal action. And actually, Attorney Schultz is working on filing criminal complaints, not only in Arizona, but making that guidance available to families who have had this happen to a loved one, because individual citizens are perfectly capable of filing a criminal complaint to the Attorney General in their state of residence. Most people just don't know how to do it. So what we're doing in the Truth for Health Foundation Legal Advisory Council is giving people some of the strategies that they can use. You need a healthcare power of attorney before you go in the hospital. And if you don't have an attorney or you can't afford high legal fees, go on LegalZoom.com and get a low-cost healthcare power of attorney tailored to your state of residence, because each state is different. And then you can start adding to it. I wanted to say, I don't want remdesivir. I don't want intubation and being put on a ventilator. Patients have that right. If they wish to express what they want done to their body when they can't speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to have that, or you're at the mercy of the hospitals, because once you go in, your family is denied access. They are using COVID infection as a reason, but they are exceeding the CDC guidelines that say 10 days of symptoms and then you're not infectious. Well, most people, by the time they get in the hospital, have already had symptoms longer than 10 days. That's why they're so sick.
And it's like this is universally across the nation. I mean, from state to state, we're seeing that same negligence or abuse by not letting family come in and be with their loved one as they're going through this trial.
Exactly right. And one of the patients in our press conference died, and the man's daughter was interviewed in our press conference. And your listeners should listen to what she had to say about how she was denied access to her father at the end of life. And the patient that we were called in as the foundation medical team to help find treatment was the very public case of Veronica Wolski in a Catholic hospital in Chicago, Resurrection Hospital, which was quite inappropriately named, as it turned out. But she was denied access to her husband, her power of attorney. They began to take away her fluids when she wanted to be released from the hospital, which then meant her oxygenation diminished and it was more difficult for her to be released. They refused release, and she died alone, essentially as a medical prisoner, refused release, and refused access to her family and her advocate. She was even denied access to a priest, as a woman whose Catholic faith meant the world to her.
And this isolation, is having a huge toll on patients. I mean, we're not created to be isolated beings.
No, it's exactly right. And in fact, Attorney Schultz in Arizona researched the Arizona statutes. Arizona law prohibits isolation of patients longer than 10 days without a court order. Her father-in-law and her mother-in-law were isolated for much, much longer than that. Her father-in-law, finally, she was able to get him out of the hospital, but her mother-in-law died totally isolated her whole hospitalization, according to what Allie shared with me. And that's in violation of Arizona law. And every 24 hours in Arizona, under the law, a patient who is held in isolation with restricted access, there has to be a medical justification in the chart written by a doctor and signed every 24 hours. That wasn't done either.
So, I mean, does the CARES Act supersede state law like that? It shouldn't?
No, it doesn't. But the problem is that people don't know it's happening, and most patients' families don't know what the state law says. Allie Schultz is an attorney. She knew how to research it and find out what the law required.
But wasn't she carried out in handcuffs?
She was carried out in handcuffs by law enforcement from the campus, from the hospital at Banner in Phoenix, where she had gone to see her mother-in-law as her mother-in-law's family, but also as her legal power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
She had the health care power of attorney for her mother-in-law and her father-in-law.
At your press conference revealing, and you just mentioned here too, patients being denied adequate fluids, being denied nutrition, and even basic medications?
Yes. When we were following the medical records on Veronica Wolski in Chicago's Resurrection Hospital, we had permission from the power of attorney and actually the patient to access her hospital medical records real time. And our team, our legal nurse consultant, was looking at the records. Her white count was rising. She had clearly evidence of a bacterial infection as well as what they were calling COVID viral pneumonia. They were not giving antibiotics. They were not giving any corticosteroids to reduce inflammation. They were not giving any nutrition. They had restricted her fluids, and she was on a preventive dose of anticoagulant, not the therapeutic dose, and yet she had evidence of blood clots that were preventing adequate oxygenation of her lungs. She refused remdesivir. She was given remdesivir. And she also, toward the end, the last 2 days, had a rising glucose, which should have meant treating that with medicine, such as insulin. She didn't get any of that. So none of the medicines that we would normally use for an ICU patient for bacterial pneumonia, viral pneumonia, diabetes, blood clots, none of the standard medicines at the standard doses were being given. And that's been true of every hospital patient that our medical advisory team has been called in to work with the lawyers to evaluate the situation and guide the lawyers on what was missing medically. Every single one of them has had exactly the same restrictions on the medicines I just listed.
You know, it's amazing, and I see also autopsies have been confirming that patients have died of these inadequate doses of the standard anticoagulation, even after family members have gone to court and demanding the therapeutic doses to help save their loved ones.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And this, people need to know, and the most fundamental message that I can get to your listeners today is, do everything in your power to stay out of the hospital. You've got early treatment available in the outpatient setting. Our COVID treatment guide on truthforhealth.org website, written by Dr. McCullough and myself, just updated in August 2021, has all the medicines you need. It has the doses. It has the stages of the illness. It has telemedicine resources. It has ways for you to get a plan in place, get your medicines for prophylaxis, which is prevention, get your medicines in place quickly. If you get symptoms, don't wait more than 5 days. Start treating it early. Get all of the supplements that we've listed, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, magnesium, N-acetylcysteine. All of them are listed in the patient guide. It's there for people to access, use. What people have to do is print it, read it, study it, and get your plan in place before you get sick. Monoclonal antibodies are very effective. We've done programs on that. They're on our website. It's a free program for taxpayers. Well, now, to try and curtail people having access to it quickly, they've cut down the, instead of 10 days of symptoms, now they won't let you get it after 8 days of symptoms. So your listeners have to know, if you think you've got COVID, you don't have more than 3 days to dawdle. You have got to get treatment started. Look into the monoclonal antibodies. The resources are on our website. We've got a fact sheet that says, here's where you go to find the monoclonal antibodies infusion center in your area. It's a taxpayer paid for program. You don't need insurance. You don't need to pay for it separately. And most people will qualify just because if you've been COVID exposed or if you're a high risk patient with symptoms, you're going to meet the criteria. And it's free to the public. You've got to get it quickly, though. That's the key. If you want to stay out of the hospital, you have got to start treatment quickly, with everything that we've listed on our website.
Okay, folks, again, that website is truthforhealth.org, truthforhealth.org. We're speaking today with Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valete, President and CEO of Truth for Health Foundation, and she, of course, has co-authored this with Dr. Peter McCullough, and you'll find that through their website, truthforhealth.org. Got some more questions I want to run by Dr. Valete here after the break. Stay with us. This is Crosstalk.
If you're like most individuals, you look forward to your vacation. Many will take great effort to consider a destination the family will enjoy, what to do, where to stay, and what highways to take to get there. Sadly, most people spend more time planning their one-week vacation than they do preparing for eternity. The Bible says our life is but a vapor. None of us has the promise of tomorrow, and our eternal destiny is sealed at death. Wouldn't it be wise to investigate these things? That's the purpose of the book, Preparing for Eternity. In this book, author Mike Gendron contrasts the truth of God's Word with the teachings and traditions he was taught for over 30 years in the Roman Catholic Church. He found that eternal life is not merited by good works, but is given freely by God's grace to those who put their faith and trust in the Lord Jesus Christ as their all-sufficient Savior. The book, Preparing for Eternity, is available for a donation of $17 or more to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829. We'll be right back.
program is called Crosstalk here on the VCY American Network. Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valete, our guest, president and CEO of Truth for Health Foundation, their website, truthforhealth.org. And Dr. Valete, you mentioned here leading into that last break here about the guide that you have available. What will they look for specifically on your site? That's the...
Look for the tab on the homepage that says right now says patient guides. And we have several under that tab: home treatment, hospital treatment, COVID long haul treatment, vaccine injury treatment, and we have a tab that says find a doctor. Now, we're in the process. By next week, we will have reorganized some of the information, and I want a tab on our homepage that says treatment, because that's what people are looking for.
Mm-hmm. How are you and Dr. McCullough and others viewed by, like, the AMA and other medical organizations, the FDA, the CDC?
Well, you mean the organizations that have sold out patients and are being paid to speak a narrative that harms people? Well, I really don't care what they think about what I'm doing, because I stand for God's gift of life, and I stand for medical truth, and I'm an advocate to the patient, and I answer to the patients, not the AMA or the CDC or the NIH. They don't treat patients. In fact, they're all in bed with the government, and they're all being paid for withholding care, and it's costing lives. So those physicians that are not standing for their oath to the patient, under the oath of Hippocrates, it's our sacred duty to do the best to our ability and judgment to serve the interests of the patient and no one else. Those doctors that don't answer to that oath will live in shame and will be held accountable to God on Judgment Day. Those of us that are maligned and lost jobs or lost livelihood, threatened with our license because we're speaking the truth, I'm proud to stand with them under the public charity, Truth for Health Foundation, that advocates for the public, and none of us are being paid a dime for our work. We are all volunteers because we care about patients' lives, and we'd like people to donate and support us so that we can keep doing what we're doing. But we are not paid to advocate for patients. We are here to treat people, save lives, and give you the medical data to the best of our ability and judgment.
Again, that's truthforhealth.org. We were talking in the last segment there about remdesivir and its use, but we also talked about often it's remdesivir and the ventilators. Give us a picture of that. Is the ventilator an ideal way to go in the treatment here to get those oxygen levels up, or do you have great concern regarding the ventilator use?
Well, we have great concern using the ventilator, because mechanical ventilation in the COVID patients has actually been shown from early in 2020. ICU doctors were seeing that patients were dying at higher rates on a ventilator than if they used other methods of delivering oxygen. That was evident by April 2020, that mechanical ventilation was actually causing more harm than helping. And in the January 2021, a National Library of Medicine report of 69 studies involving over 57,000 patients found a death rate of 45% among COVID-19 patients who were on mechanical ventilators. More alarmingly, recently, CMS or Medicare data in one state, in Texas, which normally has very good medical care, found that in patients who were mechanically ventilated longer than 96 hours, 84.8% of them died. Those are horrible statistics. Almost 85% of people in hospitals across Texas on a ventilator longer than 96 hours died. And Texas hospitals generally, throughout my career, I've had a practice in Texas since 1995, generally hospitals in Texas were actually better than the hospitals in Arizona, where I also have a practice since 1994. So this is quite alarming if the Texas data shows that high a death rate after 96 hours on a ventilator, and they're keeping patients on ventilators for, you know, a month, 2 months, as long as they keep them on the ventilator, the hospital's making more money.
You know, we've got a number of listeners, Dr. Vliet, who are healthcare workers. They listen to this program and likely horrified by some of the things you're sharing today, who do have a legitimate care and concern for their patients. Would you address them, if you would?
Yes. For those of you healthcare workers listening, I know that you're seeing what I'm talking about, and I know that many of you probably feel a great pang of conscience that you're watching people not get care, people be alone, people being frightened, families being denied access. Speak out, contact us, contact Liberty Counsel, contact some of the organizations, ICANN, for example, Children's Health Defense League, America's Frontline Doctors, Liberty Counsel, Wren's Law Firm, all of us are advocating for patients and their families. And we need whistleblowers, people, nurses and doctors and healthcare workers with integrity to speak up, to let us know what you're seeing. Some I've interviewed on our press conferences. Some have come forward with their full name because they're just outraged at what they're seeing. Some have come forward anonymously. Some are under federal whistleblower protection, getting ready for lawsuits. You know what's going on, and you know I'm right. So please speak out. Don't let more people die needlessly because of these government pressures on hospital business people that are putting doctors and nurses in conflict with your oath to the patient.
We don't have a lot of time, but we're going to open some phone lines here today on Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet with us. We've got many Arizona listeners through Tucson as well as Phoenix. You know some of the places that she has been talking about here today, but in states across this nation as well. We will have limited time. Go right to your question, if you would, when you call. Just on a side issue, Dr. Vliet, and we have not even approached this, but because it's so fresh and new, we're seeing this FDA approval of the COVID shot for children ages 5 to 12. Are you concerned by that?
I'm absolutely concerned by that. We did a whole press conference on that as well, one on press the vaccine threats to pregnancy and fertility, which are huge and a major risk. And we did a whole parents forum with 9 of our experts on a panel and answering questions from parents. People can go and listen to that. Children are not at risk of dying of COVID, and children should not be given an experimental shot when there were no studies of children. Parents really need to get informed about the lack of risk of COVID and the serious potential risk of problems for children, myocarditis. We've got programs. Dr. McCullough has done many programs on the risk of myocarditis in young people. We have adolescents who've died in high schools in Phoenix, for example, that got the shot and died of myocarditis, heart damage.
Friends, we're going to take your calls, and we've got a huge topic here today, and our lines are packed, so let's go, and we'll pick up as many callers as we can. Dominique is calling from Aquanago, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Thank you for doing this program today. This topic has been a burden on my heart for a few weeks now. Dr. Brian Artis pointed out that 704,000 Americans have died of supposed COVID, but only, and I say only in context, 1.7 million worldwide. And he said, why? Why would that? Why would American death rate be so much higher? Because in the 1918 Spanish flu, it killed close to the same amount of Americans at 650,000, but the worldwide death was not 1.7 million, it was 50 million worldwide. And he said the reason that the American death was disproportionately high was that Dr. Fauci picked that one drug, Remdesivir, that she's been talking about, that killed the most people and said it was the only drug that could be used in the American hospitals for treatment of COVID-19. So my question is, I just wonder how many of the supposed COVID deaths really were NIH protocol killings.
Well, thank you, Dominique.
I think Dominique raises a very good point, and I think with careful analysis, we would find that most of the hospital deaths are deaths due to the protocol that was used and lack of effective treatment and complications of the drug, not correctly the virus, SARS-CoV-2, COVID illness.
Jolene is our next caller from New Mexico. You're on the air, Jolene.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted clarification on where to start with filing complaints and lawsuits. My own situation is that I admitted my uncle, who had no other next of kin, into the hospital, and over the phone they asked me, do you want him resuscitated, because he didn't have anything on paper of what his wishes were. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled for days. I didn't know what to do. And I said, well, maybe if it would be, well, I finally decided that they would not have to resuscitate. But I wonder the legality of that, because I was not given any authority like power of attorney. And then he went in with stage 4 kidney disease and was given remdesivir at an emergency room at a different hospital and at that hospital also. Mm-hmm.
So you're asking, where do you file a complaint, or what?
Yes, or lawsuit.
Okay.
And if what occurred that I just explained was illegal.
Okay. Doctor, any thoughts?
Technically, they should have had in writing your directions, and they should have provided you with a healthcare power of attorney form if your uncle was unable to speak for himself, or they should have given him one if he was still alert enough to be able to sign it for himself. It's normally not done just over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And not really knowing whether you even had the authority to make that decision, that was a failure on the hospital side in following the proper protocol that they certainly know is correct. But the other aspect is you can file a complaint with your state attorney general. You can file a complaint with the state medical board and the state commission that regulates hospitals. Those complaints are no cost for you to file. And then as far as lawsuits go, medical malpractice lawsuits are not holding up very well in this situation, because the hospitals are all hiding behind the CARES Act and the COVID-covered measures. What you have to look at is some of the other grounds for legal action: criminal complaints, battery, denial of their patient rights.
Tell you what, I'm up against a break here. Thank you, Jolene, for the call. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Do you know what the real rate of inflation is? Well, the government says it's 4.5%. That's a lie. The real rate of inflation, provable, documented, with traditional accounting that the government used to use from the 1980s, puts inflation at 11%. Do you know that this inflation is created because our federal government is breaking the law and the U.S. Constitution and printing money through the Federal Reserve, which was created to try to stop bank failures and financial crisis, but it's only created financial crisis. And inflation is a hidden tax. Now the government is proposing taxing you on perceived increase in value of your house or your stocks. But what they're not taking into account is the reason your stock and house is going up is because of the hidden tax of inflation that's debasing your dollars and thus taking more dollars to buy that house or stock. The government, again, is cheating and stealing from you.
COVID protocols take their toll. That's our topic today. Dr. Elizabeth Lee Valeed is with us. Again, the website truthforhealth.org. And even in follow-up to that last question, Dr. Valeed, I see on your website right now, truthforhealth.org, you got a section called Medical and Legal Health.
Yes. We are also willing to take the names of people who had this happen to a loved one, because we do have a legal advisory council with lawyers in a variety of states who are considering legal action, and we'll be happy to facilitate connections with the lawyers we have. We need more courageous lawyers to stand up and help advocate for these families and help take these cases under the different grounds, not medical malpractice, because the hospitals know they're pretty well covered on that front. So we need to look at other avenues of violations.
Lines are packed. Let's go to Ron next. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Is there a COVID protocol treatment for post-COVID complications? My adult daughter, she had COVID 9 months ago, but she still has rancid taste and smell distortions. She's been told she's got parosmia, I think it's called. She's lost 13 pounds, panic attack, anxiety, brain fog. Can't have, you know, certain foods are just testing to consider.
Yes, actually, the COVID long haul syndrome, we have a program on our website. If you look under patient guides, there's a menu tab that says COVID long haul complications, and Dr. Mangut has a program that he gave on that. And we are treating the COVID long haul patients with some of the same medicines that are used early on, because the mechanism of injury is the same. The long haul patients are the ones that tended not to get early treatment, and so they have the complications of inflammation and blood clotting that persist. The symptoms you're describing are classic for the neurologic inflammation of COVID.
So again, that's a click under patient guides on their site, and you'll see the drop-down box, COVID long-haul complications. Thanks for the call. Jerry in Chicago, Illinois, you're on the air.
Yeah, if doctors take an oath to do everything they can to preserve and save life, how is this not fraudulent, what they are doing? And it's like the government is telling them to deny the oath that they were taken. Hmm. And the other question I have is, for people that took the jab, not me, but I have a mechanic that his son, he feels as he took the jab and he was perfectly fine. Now he said he looks like he's dying. His wife took the jab. She had a heart attack. Does your treatments help people that took the jab to preserve and help them regain their life back?
Okay, Hippocratic Oath and then treatments after the jab.
Well, let's be clear. Doctors saying they're following orders does not hold up in court for the kind of damages that we're seeing. If you recall, in World War II, the Nuremberg trial for crimes against humanity found the doctors guilty of crimes against humanity for experimenting on people and denying treatment and experimenting on prisoners. And the doctors following orders was not an excuse. Those doctors were held accountable. I think we will see that as all of these lawsuits work their way through the courts. Second question, vaccine injury complications are due primarily to inflammation and blood clotting damage. And yes, that is also responsive to the same medicines that we've been talking about. And I have patients like that in my practice who've had complications, all kinds of complications, neurologic, cardiac, intestinal, ovarian, testicular, musculoskeletal. I've had all kinds of problems in patients of mine who got the vaccine for COVID. And so we use many of the same medicines. They do work. Some of my patients that were quite severely affected by these experimental shots are getting better. It's taking time And it does take a combination of medicines, and it has to be designed for each person, but are getting better. So there is hope for getting the proper treatment. Again, go back and read the COVID treatment guide that we have on the website. Dr. McCullough and I just did the new version in August.
Mm-hmm.
And those same approaches, the same stages of the illness are similar to the stages that happen in the long haul and in the vaccine injury, because it's the spike protein damage in all three situations.
Jerry, we appreciate your call. We're heading next to Mary in Heartland. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am curious to know, for those of us who are caring for children or maybe elderly adults, if perchance they have to go into a hospital and could also possibly have COVID, is there anything we can do to protect those individuals, especially if you are separated from them?
And Doctor, we have just a minute left. Go ahead with your response.
I think the points that I've been making: get the healthcare power of attorney, engage an attorney to advocate for you. If you have someone going in the hospital, look at the COVID treatment guide. The hospital protocol that works is on our website. It's from FLCCA, the Critical Care COVID Coalition, did an excellent job with their protocol that works well for people in the hospital.
Thanks.
If you can get the hospital to give those medicines.
And that's a big if, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You need an attorney and a doctor willing to work with you.
Right. Thank you, Mary, for your call. And let's see, we're going to try and squeeze in our final call. Merle in Tennessee, just a few seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest, do you think Fauci is incompetent, or is this something much more sinister, possibly genocide?
I would suggest you read COVID-19 and the Global Predators by Dr. Peter Bregan that outlines exactly what's been going on. It's very well documented. Go to wearethepray.com, and it shows all of the planning that went into this and all of the orchestrated attempt to prevent treatment. And then I will let you draw your conclusion.
Merle, thank you for the call. And Dr. Vallee, thank you so much for being with us and joining our listeners today and with such vital information.
You are so welcome. Thank you, Jim.
Sure. And if you could stay on the line just for a moment. Friends, you've been listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America. Our guest, Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vallee, and the website truthforhealth.org. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.